CinemaJaw is brought to you this week by Wallace Park, a memoir. Seeking refuge from Hell's Kitchen in New York City, Eddie's parents sent him to Portland, Oregon for a chance at a better life. Here, he teams up with Ed to explore the meaning of adolescence. Their friendship evolves, though, as Ed pushes the boundaries of risky behavior, and all Eddie can do is watch. Packed with enticing sports play-by-plays, thrilling fight scenes, and awe-inducing love motifs, Wallace Park, a memoir, tells a unique yet universal story of adversity highlighted with friendship and love. Wallace Park, a memoir, is now available on Amazon or visit its website, wallaceparkmemoir.com. You're listening to CinemaJaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye, the movie guy, and this week on CinemaJaw, Matt, we talk in run-on sentences as we cover our top five favorite long shots in movie history.
I really thought you were going to say we take a long look at the long take.
Hey, that isn't bad.
That's kind of what I was going with in
but
my head.
But I really like to talk in run-on sentences.
Do you?
They just keep going without a cut, no period, no punctuation. I just keep talking.
You should try those punctuations.
They're fun every once in a while.
They are.
But we are doing this,
Matt.
Yeah, period. We are doing this in honor of a guest we have joining us, Caleb Pike. He has a website, DSLR Video Shooter. He is an expert on cameras, all things photography. And what better guest to have?
Cinematography.
Cinematography. And what better guest to have when we're talking about these awesome long takes? I love tracking shots in movies. I love the complexity of it all. Sometimes how they get the actors, you know, all the blocking of the scene and where the camera moves and rotates and what it highlights. I love these shots.
Yeah, and I mean, I might be mistaken, but I think he even has a hand in a class about motion and tracking shots and stuff like that. So
what
he knows his stuff. Yeah.
He does. And he has a video podcast. We're going to get to the whole thing
when
Caleb gets here. In addition to that, Matt, we go eye for an eye on a new movie with Jason Bateman entitled This Is Where I Leave You.
I wish.
This Is Where I Leave You, yeah. Matt. All right. We have reviews of The Congress and also The Zero Theorem.
Exciting.
Our top five long shots, of course. And also, in honor of The Zero Theorem, you will be taking Caleb on in Terry Gilliam, Christoph Waltz movie trivia.
Wow.
Obviously, okay. Waltz stars in the movie. It's directed by Terry Gilliam. So pretty interesting trivia we got there.
I'm excited for that.
And it's funny. There's a movie coming out on video that we both saw and really liked in the movie theater starring Tom Cruise entitled Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And there's a big fuss going out. Not really a big fuss, I shouldn't say, but in the movie world that they actually changed the title of the movie for its video release.
Right.
You know, they're now calling it Live, Die, Repeat, Edge of Tomorrow.
Right, colon,
yeah.
Edge of Tomorrow.
That's... And it's funny because I was thinking about it. I mean, of all the Tom Cruise movies lately that have come out, that's clearly not even that bad of a title. The worst title that could have done way better if it had a better name was Oblivion by far.
No.
There has been?
Oh, sure. Night and Day?
Oh, come on.
Yeah, it's way worse.
That's not that bad, I don't think.
It's terrible.
Cinema War. Oh, that's going to be a good one, Matt.
I'm excited.
So am I.
I'm ready for that. So you're going to lose. That's just a foregone conclusion.
Well, it is a jam-packed jaw, as always, Matt.
Indeed, yeah.
So without further ado, we bring in our guest, Caleb Pike. Welcome to CinemaJaw.
Hey. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on.
You bet. Enjoying our beautiful day in the lovely city of Chicago.
Yeah, it's been raining cats and dogs all day.
I tell you what, though. We get to the beginning here with your video podcast.
Right on.
We do an audio podcast. The video podcast, a little bit more complicated to pull off.
Yeah, definitely pretty much from all levels, from recording to actually distribution, because you're dealing with a lot more data and compression and all that fun stuff. People's trying to actually listen or watch it, you know?
Right.
Podcasts, I load them up on the phone when I drive, all this good stuff. Can't really pull it off with the video, so.
Did you ever think of doing it as audio, or because it's dealing with cinematography and dealing with cameras and such, you felt you had to do it as a video podcast?
Yeah, and for whatever reason, I just feel more comfortable on camera, which is weird, you know?
Rather than talking, really?
I know, yeah, it's really strange, but maybe it's because I talk with my hands a lot, or I like to have something to show people, you know, do a camera review and have the camera in my hands. So I've done some audio. There's some interviews with filmmakers on there, and I do include that in the iTunes feed. So, you know, every once in a while, one will pop up, but primarily video.
All right, so take us to the beginning when you got interested in cameras and photography and cinematography and all that good stuff.
Do we even say the name of his podcast?
Well, it's the same as the site. So just the DSLR Video Shooter Podcast. Yeah, it's on the site, it's on YouTube, and then the iTunes podcast. For going back, oh man, in middle school, high school, I liked cameras, and my dad helped me get a little Sony like crossover prosumer camera.
Okay.
Played with that on and off, and then one day I was shooting on a DSLR, and I was like, damn, wouldn't it be awesome if this shot video, you know, like, just, I would take a still with a 50 at f1.4, so you get this crazy shallow depth of field. I'm like,
you realize you're speaking Greek to us.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe not Elias.
Elias probably knows.
You know, when you take a photo with a sucky camera, everything's in focus, right? And then you pull out a pro DSLR with a really nice lens, and you have your subject in focus, and the background just blooms into this beautiful out-of-focus stuff. You can't pull that off with video cameras unless you zoom all the way in and stand, you know, 50 feet away. So I remember just like, oh, that'd be sick. And, oh, well, move on with life. Went in and out of video, graduated high school, spent a year in Pennsylvania, and then came back to Chicago to go to school. And I wanted to go to film school. And everyone was telling me, don't do it. It's expensive. You're going to go into debt, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, well, I'll just do like a business degree in marketing or something. Did one semester of school, absolutely hated it. Just every single day. I loved my economics class. That was worth it. But everything else, I just wanted to get out of there. So committed to one semester, quit school.
Where'd you go to school?
It was a community college. Okay. I thought I'd knock some of that stuff out before spending a lot. And that it worked out because I quit. And I'm fairly proud that I quit. A lot of people think quitting is such a bad thing, but it's like a bad book. It's why keep reading it? You know, right. Just call it a day and move on to what you're actually interested in. And just started shooting, trying to, you know, I was working at a church doing some stuff, and I was like, hey, you guys, they had a crazy video department, so I just walked in there and was like, hey, can I help out with something? And ended up shooting with them for quite some time, lots of broadcast stuff.
So you were just always interested in video. You were obviously drawn to it this entire time.
Yeah, and then one day I was just getting into lighting, and I was shooting in my grandfather's basement. I was living with my grandfather at the time, cheap rent. Just recorded myself pointing out the lights and where they were, and just to kind of document it for myself, mm-hmm. You know, just journal a little bit what I was learning. And I threw that on Vimeo, and a bunch of people started watching that and asking for more. I started the website as kind of like, I'll just store these here. And then within about 2 months, it just blew up. And at this time, DSLRs started shooting video. So it was just the perfect storm for the site, and I enjoy showing people things, and it just really took off from there.
And so for the jawheads who might not have seen these video podcasts, it basically is explaining everything from the lighting to the cameras, the new cameras that come out. Do you get these cameras beforehand and are able to talk about them on the podcast?
Yeah, it used to be I had to buy it, and I was just reviewing my own stuff. Then B&H Photo Video in New York, you guys do audio. I'm sure you've heard of them. They do a lot of audio. They reached out to me and were like, hey, you want to be an affiliate? And they give you a guy over there who's just at the end of a phone, and they send you stuff for 30 days. So I can get on a list for a camera when it's first announced, and then get it, you know, the day it comes out, review it, send it back. So that really helped kind of propel things forward.
Sure. So is the podcast mainly reviews of the product or also best uses of, like sort of like a how-to?
It used to be lots of tutorials, which mm-hmm. I really miss. And then I really got into doing the reviews, which are good, and they, you know, they kind of pay more. Early on, they paid more because, you know, there's a product link to it, you know,
sure.
Affiliate commission and stuff. So I just ended up getting inundated with people wanting to send me stuff, and I would just be like, oh, sure, I'll review that.
That sucks.
Oh, free stuff. Yeah, not all of it is free. You know, I get little tinkery things for free, and it just got to the point where I was just so backlogged, and I was still getting them all out, but I had no time because I had deadlines with these, and all the stuff I wanted to do on tutorials kind of were pushed back. So I'm just now finishing up like the last three, and then it's just an open field for getting back to fun stuff, you know. So I'm really looking forward to that, but lots of gear stuff. Yeah,
that's awesome. And I was wondering too, I would imagine during these video podcasts, do you actually use, when you're reviewing the product, do you actually then able to show them the actual video of what that particular camera took?
Footage from the
Yeah, it was really awkward at first because I had this terrible camera, this video camera, and then my DSLR. But uh-huh. I wanted to show the DSLR,
right.
So it was really awkward, and then eventually made the jump to having two cameras, then three cameras, and Yeah, I try to, when it comes to the camera reviews, really get out. And that's what I love about living in Chicago is, you know, just walk outside, start shooting, try to get as much footage out to people as possible.
That's awesome. I think as a guy for me that doesn't know cameras that well, like Elias is pretty technical savvy over here. He comes in, he starts shooting these beautiful photos. I don't know what these cameras are at all. So maybe I should watch just to get a grasp of what we're talking about sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's been a real blast, and it's just crazy in the last 4 years how it's gone from just an accident to full-time.
And is that how long it's been going, 4 years?
Yeah, since 2010. So like awesome. I think February. Well, yeah, February 2010 is when it started.
And is it a weekly podcast?
It's all over the place. It used to be just whenever I could get a video out, and then it got to two a week. And now it's just, you know, I try to do once a week and get everything scheduled. So I'm finally getting ahead where, and I've just been shooting a lot, which is good because it's so easy. And for months and months and months, even like 6 months, 8 months, I didn't shoot at all. For like legit projects, I was just doing my stuff and I was still shooting, but so I've been in the last 3 months or 4 months just not, I know nothing about the news, just like solid shooting, which has been just awesome, getting out doing documentaries and music videos and stuff like that. So
Caleb, when you watch a movie, just anything in the theater, do you get really caught up in what they're shooting it on?
Not as much, just a little bit. But I'm not, when it comes to feature films, you know, it's still kind of half film, half really high-end video cameras like the Arri Alexa and Red and whatnot. And so I don't focus as much on that. A lot of it's like lens choice and lighting. But I'm just like everybody else. You get sucked up in the story and you know, the movie's over and you're like, oh, I thought I was going to kind of pick this apart and look at how they did camera movement and whatnot. And it's just gone. And I'm fine with that. I really am.
I notice for me, it's always the second or third time that I've seen a movie that I start to appreciate
all the
sort of technical stuff that went toward. Or, you know, if I see it in the theater the very first time, I don't realize, wow, that was such a great shot. Then I revisit the film and I'm like, wow, that was stunning that they brought the camera and everything.
There are exceptions to that, though, which may even come up on our list tonight.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Maybe the only time is when I'm watching movies with my wife, because she knows, you know, that I'm into all this stuff. So she'll just be like, how they do that? And I have to, like, I almost have to, like, rewind because I'm not really analytically picking it apart.
And then you lie, like, you know what you're talking about at that point.
Yeah,
oh,
right,
this
yeah.
is clearly
oh,
what right, right, Scorsese right, had right. in mind here.
Green screen and stuff. No.
But you mentioned that you do get out and shoot music videos and such. So you're doing that on the side
Docs.
As well?
Right. Yeah, that's become scarce because it's hard to find a client or someone that has the budget to where I can actually make it worth my worthwhile. So it's one of those things, I've got so much going on. So to give up a week for shooting to do something for free, it depends on the project. And there's some stuff that's just awesome. So I did this, some work with a band. They had a Kickstarter, so they had some money, which is awesome. But, you know, it wasn't really what I would normally charge, but they were just such a cool dynamic of five guys. When you get five guys with awesome music and they all look interesting, you know, they're really diverse but all still look somewhat similar, and they've got this really cool story going on, and then you're like, well, that doesn't come up often, so just jump on that.
What's the name of the band? I want to jump on the bandwagon.
The band is completely just left my mind.
Throw it in the jawbox.
Throw it
in the jawbox. You'd be shocked. Elias is back from break. We're gonna get to him in a second. This guy finds facts like you wouldn't believe.
Oh yeah, and I just ran on like no sleep. The song is Foxtrot. So I can get a link in the show notes or something maybe.
Yeah, for sure.
The music video isn't out yet. I just submitted it to them, so they're going to be releasing on their own schedule. But
awesome,
lots of fun stuff.
So we have a lot of local filmmakers that have come on the show before, and I know that still listen as jawheads.
Oh, yeah.
For the best place for them to check out your videos and listen to the podcast, or at least see the podcast, best place to do so online?
DSLRVideoShooter.com. Everything's right there. You can subscribe to the podcast and check it out.
Also on YouTube as well?
Yep, same thing. DSLR Video Shooter, all one word, is the username.
It's awesome.
iTunes as well, you mentioned, yeah?
Yeah, if you just search DSLR Video Shooter, you should come across that.
Perfect. And are you on Twitter as well?
Yes, Twitter, Caleb Pike, all one word, lowercase.
Awesome, man.
Definitely jawheads, especially the movie jawheads, the local filmmakers that I know listen to, looking for technology and how to upgrade. It's good stuff.
Yeah, people need to learn how to make these films that we enjoy watching so much, you know, and Caleb's a good source here in Chicago, and through his videos, you can learn about it wherever you are in the world.
Yeah, and isn't it the fun thing that you're able to see these filmmakers that are extremely creative, didn't have the budget, but now can really put together one heck of a product with these cameras? I mean, it's amazing how far we've come.
Oh, yeah, and that's the only reason I didn't go to film school. Like, 20 years ago, you had to.
Right.
You know, if you wanted to touch a cinema-level camera, you had to go to film school, and 20, 30 years ago. Whereas now, there's tons of books out there. I've written about some of that stuff. And that's what I did, is I bought a $30 book on cinematography, grab a camera and a lens and cheap tripod, and that's all you need to get started. And it's almost better that way.
Right.
Because you get all this crap, because I started getting some revenue and started spending money on gear. And it really hurts you, because you buy the stuff that you know you need, but you haven't really found that need yet. So when you have just camera and lens, oh my gosh, you really do learn so much more instead of tinkering around with all this crap. It slows you down. So, and James and the Drifters, that's the band. I have no idea why I left
me.
Wow,
didn't even have to go to the Jawbox. I love it.
Rescued it from the Jaws.
What I was going to say is, a guy like you, how many lenses do you possess?
You know what? I'm very proud to say it's about 4.
Really?
It used to be, I was really into the whole, I got a whole Nikkor Prime set, blah, blah, blah. They're all the fastest Nikon lenses, yada, yada. And it's stupid. It really is. Unless you shoot so many different things, which most of us don't. So I rely on probably 4 lenses, 3 zooms and a prime.
Wow.
That's about all I shoot on.
No fisheye?
I did. I just didn't use it much. So yeah. It's one of those things. Hey, if you're not, it's cash on the, it's the whole opportunity cost thing.
Sure.
So I added, 15 lenses or whatever, but that's thousands of dollars sitting on a shelf depreciating and I'm not using it. So get that stuff sold and use it for rent, use it for other stuff you're going to need, actually. You don't need a lot. I've come so far from, I've just sold all this stuff, clear the studio out, and it's so free. It really is. Have the one thing that is like hardcore and you use all the time and buy the best version of that.
Sure.
And then just keep it simple.
Yeah. I know we were at C2E2 or at an event like that, and Elias was going to take some video, and people are shocked how cool the camera looks. He goes on there. He's got this nice, Steadicam.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. And the video that it takes is stunning. I go back, I look at the footage. It's like, wow.
My cell phone shoots 4K video.
Oh, that's impressive.
Isn't that crazy?
That's pretty sick.
I mean, dude, it's ridiculous what you
What's
can get.
What's your frame rate, though?
I have no idea.
Up to 120 like the iPhone?
I don't know. During the break, you can take a look. This thing is ridiculous. And it's in your pocket. It's so great the way technology is advancing. You can get these tools that, like you were saying, Caleb, we didn't have access to back in the day.
Yep.
So it's a good time to be a filmmaker.
Definitely. Filmmaker, Jawheads, check out Caleb's podcast. It's awesome. As we mentioned, Matt, Elias has returned. And before we get to Eye for an Eye, and before we get anywhere further, we got to mention, we were missing this guy big time.
Right.
Finally, all of a sudden, we're sad. We're just looking over the Jawbox, wondering if he would ever come back. And next thing we know, we heard a pounding down there. He was back in the Jawbox. He just crawled back in.
Yeah.
What's going on, guys? It's an epic tale of how I got back here from Africa when Matt sent me out there.
Tangier is where we lost track of you.
Yeah. Well, but...
No Ebola or anything?
No, luckily not.
We still have you in the quarantine suit just in case.
Yeah. And it's a shame because I want to eat this, our sponsor, that gyro, vegan gyro meat or whatever. I want to eat that, but I can't with the suit on.
No, I'll throw some in there.
All right. Thank you. Well, it's good to be back. And especially on an episode that Caleb's here. I used to watch his YouTube show, not knowing where this guy lived anywhere in the world. Who knew? And then I was at this directing motion class. It was an intensive video class. I also didn't go to film school. So, you go to these random classes to meet, network with people, learn new things. And, I met Caleb. I was like, holy crap, that's the video shooter guy. And,
small world.
Crazy small world.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, Caleb's on Cinema Job.
Yes.
What?
And I'm back, too. So, what are the odds?
Small world, and you've seen a lot of it in the past month.
Oh, a lot. We'll talk about that over the next couple of weeks here.
Oh, great hearing Elias's voice, isn't it, Matt?
It is.
All right, get back in that Jawbox.
All right, bye.
All right, Matt, it brings us to a segment called Eye for an Eye, and Eye for an Eye is sponsored by...
Well, hey, Taft Vegetarian Gyros.
Whoa, tell me more.
All right, you have to go to your local Whole Foods and demand it. This is great for vegetarians or carnivores just looking for a healthier option. Taft Veggie Gyros, fully cooked, pan heat in 60 seconds, high in protein, low in calories, and have zero cholesterol. Like I said, go to Whole Foods, demand it, or you can call 212-664-1974 and ask for samples. And we thank them for their support.
Eye for an eye this week, Matt. This is where I leave you. When their father passes away, four grown siblings are forced to return to their childhood home and live under the same roof together for a week, along with their oversharing mother and an assortment of spouses, exes, and might-have-beens. The film stars Jason Bateman, Tina Fey, and Jane Fonda. It is based on the best-selling book by Jonathan Troper and is directed by Sean Levy, who has directed the Night at the Museum movies. Matt, interested or ignore on This Is Where I Leave You?
Ignore.
Nothing strikes your fancy there, huh?
Not at all.
We throw it over to Caleb. Interested or ignore on This Is Where I Leave You?
Ignore, very much so.
Wow. Wow, tough. I'm worried about this one because I read the book, and I loved the book. And you know when you're so excited.
Those guys.
I was like, oh, wow. They can't screw this thing up. I really thought this could be an Academy Award contender. It was that good of a book. Because it really nails the comedy and the drama perfect. And you know, he sees his wife cheating on him, and then his father passes away, and he has this whole, you know, sort of midlife crisis.
Whoa, spoiler alert.
No,
Jesus
Christ. This is right in the beginning of the movie. It's more or less how the film opens.
That's in the trailer.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It really opens up that way. And the beauty is that he spends time with his family. I have to admit, I've seen the trailer. I was a little worried. I'm hoping for best. I'm interested in seeing this one, but I got to admit I'm a little worried.
Sounds like a piece of junk.
No, I don't like that Jane Fonda's in this movie. I didn't see her as the mother at all in this one, so we'll see how that goes.
Really? Jane Fonda's the part you're hung up on?
Yeah, I am.
Really?
Tina Fey, too, I don't know. We'll see. And I bring up Tina Fey because Tina Fey... So, really quick, Jawheads, that's two ignores, one interested for This Is Where I Leave You. And Tina Fey is our subject of three words or less. How do you describe Tina Fey? And we're going to throw it over to Caleb first. Do you got three words that describe Tina Fey?
Coming out of nowhere, I'm going to say funny, slutty, hilarious.
Wow, not bad.
Okay.
Yeah. Slutty, eh? All right.
She's kind of got that thing going.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Matt, you got three words that describe Tina
Weekend Fey? Weekend Update alumni. That's where I, yeah.
All right, not
that's
bad.
Three words.
I was going to go with stick with TV.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's harsh, dude.
I don't like her going in. I haven't liked one movie that she's been in so far. I thought Date Night was a letdown.
Baby Mama was pretty good.
I hated Baby Mama.
Really?
Yeah, hated it. Absolutely hated it.
I thought it was underrated, actually. I liked it a lot.
Was she in Mean Girls, or did she just direct Mean Girls? She might have had like a small part in there. That would probably be the only movie that I thought was decent, but I don't know. Everything so far lately is, and I think here I'm a little worried about her, too, and This Is Where I Leave You. Jason Bateman was perfectly cast here, but everybody else I'm a little worried about.
Did you see Bad Words, Jason Bateman?
I have not, but it's out on video.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah?
Yeah. It was good.
Nice.
I liked it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Now, we threw this question out onto Twitter to the Jawheads.
Yeah.
Matt, we get any responses?
Yes, of course we did. Allison Jones, who is AJones_SD, said, one amazing woman.
All right.
That's three words.
Yeah.
Wills, who is @William_Dale on Twitter, said, effing clever.
I like it.
Yeah.
She is clever. She's, and especially on these live shows, performances with Amy Poehler, you got to give her credit there.
This is a great Twitter name. Your lineup sucks, bro. Who is the same on Twitter. It's UR lineup sucks with an X, bro. Said Tina Yuther's clone. And that is a very esoteric reference because Tina Yuther's, I mean, that's from the like 70s, right?
I don't even know her.
Jawbox Tina Yuther's because I barely know her. It's a very old reference.
Nice.
Mark Kearney chimed in and said, perfect Sarah Palin. And no.
Oh, yeah. She was good as Sarah Palin on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah,
she did
was.
A hilarious imitation.
It was decent.
Yeah. I like that.
Ted Palooka, the same on Twitter, said, funny hot mom.
Right.
She's a good looking girl.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no denying that. I think she's attractive, I should say. Jesse, who is @JurassicGriffin, said, very funny woman. Yeah. I mean,
there you go.
No denying. Tina Fey has very good comic sensibilities. I think she's a great comedian. I was going to say female comedian. She's just a great comedian, period. But you know what, Rye? I'm going to give it to you. I think you're right. I don't know if she's made the transition to film successfully.
Good. We agree.
Yeah, it's rare a moment here on Cinema Jaw.
Stick with television, Tina. If you missed three words that describe Tina Fey and you have Twitter pulled up, Jawheads, shoot us a tweet at Cinema Jaw. We'll retweet it and get the discussion going. Matt, it brings us to a new movie out in limited release across the country and also on video on demand entitled The Congress.
You had it all, Robin. A movie queen at 24. And you slammed all the open doors, crushed all the dreams. Then Aaron's condition started going downhill.
Eventually, he will be completely blind.
This proposal won't be on the table again. Robin Wright for Jeff Green.
You're the future, Robin. I'm a Princess Bride. And now I'm in this situation.
What situation are you in, Jeff?
The situation of offering you the last contract that you'll ever have. We want to scan you. All of you, your body, your face, your emotions, your laughter, your tears. And we want to own this thing called Robin Wright.
Robin Wright stars as Robin Wright in this ultra-creative new film from director Ari Folman. In a time when movie studios can scan an actor and use their digital likeness, Robin Wright is offered a contract by Miramount Studios to be digitalized and used at their discretion. After a little twisting of her arm by her agent, played perfectly by Harvey Keitel, she agrees to it. The film then takes an interesting turn as we meet back up with Robin 19 years later. She enters an area known as the Animation Zone. Here, people from all walks of life take a drug that lets their mind be and do whatever it would want. This is the new form of entertainment in the future. As one of the characters points out, movies are from a past era. The animation used here is gorgeous, and the score by Max Richter is elegant and elevates the material. There are obvious social themes that Folman is hitting on, one of them being the problem of these giant companies dictating our entertainment needs, not to mention how far people in society will go to escape their problems. However, there is much, much more going on here. I, for one, Matt, love the fact that early on, Robin Wright's character said she would not want her digital self to do sci-fi films, yet this is what the second half of the movie turns out to be. Were we watching a movie using her likeness made by the studio? I needed time to let this movie settle, and the more time I think about it, the more I liked it. Ride the Movie Guy's grade, 3.5 Jaws.
All right. I really liked the movie. I really, really did. And you used to do parents for films. If this film had parents, it would be Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Pink Floyd's The Wall. It's a trip. It's a freaking... don't watch this movie on acid because I think you're going to really have some problems. But I thought that the setup... And this is... I enjoyed it. All right? I'm just going to say three Jaws for this movie. But the setup, the first act, was such an interesting premise, like the whole digital scanning thing. And then I think when they took the left turn, and it was the sharpest left turn you can imagine in a movie, it really just lost sight of that. And granted, they did explore some other themes, which I thought was cool, but I kind of wanted to see what they set up in the first act of the movie. Like, what are the problems going to be with her digital self? And then they jump right to 20 years later. So it almost was like, well, why did they set that up? I mean, with this whole Animation Zone, it's almost like a different movie. And then she gets stuck in it and the whole hallucination thing. It's like, you're right. You can't rely on anything in this film being real at any point. In fact, I don't want to spoil anything, but toward the end, she almost gets caught in a bit of a loop where she's re-experiencing things. And at that point, you're really lost. Like,
right.
What happened and what didn't.
Mm-hmm. But do you agree where I had mentioned, like, in that first part of the movie, the studio is sort of selling her as being this digital self to make these movies. Were we not in some way watching what the studio may have produced of her likeness?
No, I think that's a jump.
I don't think so.
I think it might be a little bit of a jump.
Wow. All right. Two jumps there. All right.
Because the studio produced those triple R movies, or at least that's what they showed us,
right,
in the movie, where she is this sci-fi queen who's, like, attacking robots with an electric whip and stuff in the trailers that they show. I don't know. I love the animation. I agree with you there. It kind of reminded me of the Tex Avery stuff that they evoked in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And even the mask a little bit.
Sure. Now we threw this to Caleb on short notice, but you checked out the movie as well, Caleb.
Yes, and oh my gosh. I'm sitting there like, what is this? What am I watching? I mean, multiple times I kind of had to wake myself up and be like, is this my, am I watching my TV? Like, what is this stuff? It really is, feels like a dream. And there's, I'm going to have to say I dislike it more than I like it, but barely. I think it's beautiful, but I kind of can understand what you're saying with the disconnect between the different acts.
Yeah.
And to me, they broke some rules, and I'm all about breaking rules, but there's some that they're a little inconsistent about breaking. And for me, a big thing was using the actor's name, them playing themselves.
Right.
Right? So, first
well,
of all,
only
we
Robin
have,
Wright was. I mean, Harvey Keitel
right.
was not playing Harvey
That's
Keitel.
That's the problem.
Well, I had no problem with that.
Right. But what happens is, it's like in a movie, you rarely have the actor look at the camera ever. Very rarely. Because the second you do that...
Unless you're Ferris Bueller.
Right. The second you do that, your audience goes, whoa, I'm sitting in a chair at the movie theaters with my popcorn watching a movie. You've ripped them out of that, this is an experience, and they're in the experience, right?
Right.
So then they suddenly become the viewer again. So you have, okay, so she's playing herself, but... You see these other actors, and you're like, oh, are they themselves? And then you try to figure all that out. And then, but then we have disconnects like, you know, we're not using Paramount, we're using Miramount, right?
Yeah, Miramount, sort of a mix of Paramount and Miramount.
Yeah. And so I almost wonder if it would have been, and, you know, in one way, it speeds things along because, you know, she looks at a movie poster of her past movie, mm-hmm. Princess Bride, and we can all get that, right?
And it was a beautiful
Instantly.
Moment, yeah.
Right. We don't have no backstory, we get it.
Yep.
But it would have been interesting if the movie started out of us watching this actress who we don't know and it's part of the movie, see her develop and we see how big and all this stuff instead of us just starting with her. So I don't know. You know, I would have liked to see maybe more of what they would have done with her and as opposed to it getting weird right
yeah.
away.
How they
and
would have
staying
used,
weird
used
for a long time.
Self.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of develop that stuff in a different way early on instead of and take away some of these really long weird scenes that are later maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's
Yeah,
we only saw once I really didn't pick it apart terribly.
Without giving anything away, I'll just say that there's a large part of this film that's animated. And then toward the end we do get back to the real world and see what's going on. So that was such a relief for me because at that point her fantasy had become so strange and difficult to follow.
You didn't even know if it was possibly being real.
I needed some sort of point of reference.
Right.
And there were some disappointments there. Like she meets a character when she's in this this animated hallucination that you never see, voiced by John Hamm.
Right. From Mad Men fame.
Right. And I'm trying not to do spoilers here, but we never get to see what's going on with that character in the real world. And I thought that would have really explained a lot. So they leave a lot of questions. And maybe that's cool. Maybe that was the intention of the filmmaker to not answer all these questions, but left me a little high and dry.
And they,
go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. And they kind of set it up like we were going to see him.
Right.
There's something said by his character. They're like, ooh, are we going to see something? And then nothing.
But I know you guys both said this was a jump on my part of that where you're sort of seeing this idea of her because it was 19 years later. Maybe that her driving up to take the animation was just her digital self. We don't know that for sure because she was still
That's
under
true.
Contract.
Dream within a dream.
Yeah. So it's almost like what if what we were seeing is this... And at the same time, the filmmaker, Ari Folman, was using it as social commentary, but he was giving us basically this idea that this actress was still under contract with the studio, and now what we were seeing was that this awesome sci-fi film, because it is the concept of them taking drugs and what was really happening to them that we see the real world again, as you pointed out, Matt, was interesting as all hell.
I think you're taking drugs, Ry.
Hey, I'm just thinking about
you're
it.
Like, and, again. What if she's really in a movie within the movie, man?
I just like to think about things. Like I said, when it first ended, I probably wasn't as big as fan as I thought about it, you know, in a day later. And I was sitting there at work, and I was thinking, like, wow, I really like this movie. Because I started thinking in that direction that maybe we were seeing her digital self still.
Honestly, the funny thing is, it's just the opposite for me. Right when I finished watching the movie, I was like, that was brilliant. One of the most interesting original, certainly visually cool movies I've seen in a long time. And then the more I thought about it, the less I liked it. There was so many things. The whole hallucination, mass hallucination thing, like, how are they all seeing the same thing? So Robin Wright, who has no basis of knowledge for what these people are doing that she's seeing at this Congress convention, when they're taking these new drugs and turning into characters, how is her hallucination?
Well, we're only seeing her hallucination.
Right.
The other characters may be seeing something totally different.
Right, but she's seeing them turn into characters, which is the new thing that they're selling at this convention. I'm not giving anything away. So how does she know what they're doing if she's hallucinating? You know, there's some plot holes in the science there. Yeah.
Sure. Well, now, since we're talking about great shots, and we're going to be talking about like long shots in movies, but one that I wanted to highlight in this movie was the scanning of Robin Wright when she was in that bubble.
Yeah.
Did you guys like that particular? I loved it. And how they would only use the cameras every once in a while during some of her emotions. You would get the quick takes of
Harvey Keitel's monologue in that scene was absolutely amazing. Yeah. Just great. I loved it.
All right, so I gave it 3.5 Jaws. Matt?
Three.
Three?
Yeah.
Caleb?
I'd have to, like, categorize them. Probably 2, 2.5.
Boy,
I'm going to be harsh today.
Yeah, boy, harsh. But definitely Jawheads. If you're looking for something outside of the box.
For sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's about as far outside of the box as you can get.
It is playing in select cities and also on video on demand. So definitely check it out and let us know what you think. Shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw.
It's a good movie. I recommend everyone check it out. And don't take drugs first.
All right. Maybe not a good movie. We'll see what Matt has to say. We also caught up. Same deal is opening on September 19th in limited release. It's on video on demand as well. This is great, isn't it, Matt?
Oh,
the world we're living in.
I know. I tell you. And you don't like it.
Is The Zero Theorem, right. Directed by Terry Gilliam.
You say Terry Gilliam, and then you say Christoph Waltz, and you have my attention, Ryan. This new film just came out. It stars Christoph Waltz pretty much. There's some other characters, actors in this, but Melanie Thierry, I believe her name is.
And Matt Damon has a small role in there.
Matt Damon pops up. But largely, this is Christoph Waltz by himself. And that alone, I could watch all day. It kind of transpires as a dystopian, Orwellian future. And I believe Caleb actually said it was like, what did you say?
I just watched the trailer and I'm like, what is this? And I thought it was kind of like Willy Wonka meets Blade Runner.
I think that's fair to say. Willy Wonka, at least visually, not necessarily with the story, and Blade Runner certainly with this dystopian future. This guy lives, he's sort of a agoraphobic computer programmer, and he's trying to get allowed to just work from home. But management won't allow this until he gets put on this project called the Zero Theorem, which the aim of this project is basically to prove that everything adds up to zero. And this guy, whose name is Cohen Leth, is perfect for the role because he's an obsessive, he's a recluse, he just wants to be by himself and do his job and not be touched and not be talked to. But he soon gets some gifts from this company who've put him on this job in a call girl / love interest and a teenage assistant, and they become sort of his friends, and he starts to realize he does have a human side. It's Terry Gilliam, so you know it's a trip getting there.
Here was my major problem with it. How many Jaws would you give this thing?
I thought it was solid. Wow, did we watch a trippy batch of movies this week? It's a 3-jaw movie. Yeah, I mean, maybe even 3.25. I really liked it.
Yeah, I wasn't his biggest fan. And number one, I like depressing movies. I don't mind if there's, you know.
See, I didn't find it depressing.
Oh, I found it very depressing. I mean, the whole concept that they're trying to
what do you
solve.
Mean you don't like depressing movies? You fucking love depressing movies.
I do. That's what I'm saying. I do.
Okay.
But this is so depressing because the whole theorem, the whole idea that they're trying to solve is that human existence and that the universe and
all
this
is for naught.
Is for naught.
Right.
And they're trying to solve that. What's more depressing than that?
Okay. So, first of all,
that's the whole goal of the movie.
That's not the goal of the movie. And that's really what Terry Gilliam is getting at in a lot of his movies.
I know, but this one was really just, I don't know, the way it hit me. I was like watching it and I felt myself fall into depression.
Really?
Because yeah, I hit the bottle hard that night.
As opposed to what? I mean, this was Tuesday. I mean, no, I think that the message of the movie is, even if everything is for nothing and there's no higher meaning, the thing that you're going through now, like love and connection to other people, is what it's all about. It doesn't matter if everything adds up to nothing, because we have what's the moment, the now.
Sure. Well, I do like a lot of Terry Gilliam's, obviously, is, you know, the way he creates his worlds are they're just outstanding.
Oh, Tilda Swinton pops up, too.
She does. Tilda Swinton does pop up. Not enough of her, though. God, I know. Want it more.
They probably left a lot of that on the cutting room floor.
But a lot of what he's doing when he's trying to prove this theorem is almost like a video game. He's got this controller. And for me, watching it, there wasn't enough explanation on what exactly he was doing. And so there was a lot of focus on that where he's, you know, moving this. And I was like, what is going on here? I was lost during all that. And that took me out of the movie. I'm like, what? I don't know.
No, because every time he built one of these structures or solved one part of the equation,
another one would crumble.
Would fall apart.
Right.
That was very well illustrated.
Yeah, but they could have talked a little bit more of exactly what was going on in that video game-esque part.
And how about the cyber sex? The theme song for this girl's website was
Creep from Radiohead.
Creep from Radiohead. I thought for sure that
I did like that, obviously, yeah. And to click
Ryan
enter.
Ryan is a big Radiohead fan.
And to click enter, you had to click right between your legs. It was pretty funny. I mean, yeah. For me, two Jaws for the Zero Theorem. I think the Jawheads at home can skip this one.
Wow. You are so freaking wrong. It's unbelievable.
I don't think so at all.
It's a visually impressive, fun Terry Gilliam movie. It's up there with 12 Monkeys.
No, it's not.
Absolutely.
Bite your tongue.
No,
it's nowhere
is.
Close. 12 Monkeys is a masterpiece. But 12 Monkeys,
12
Bruce
Monkeys
Willis.
Is a Bruce Willis movie.
And he's got a great shaved head in the movie. And I'm shocked how good Christoph Waltz looked with a shaved head.
He did.
He looked pretty damn cool.
He did.
Yeah. All right, two Jaws for Ride the Movie Guy on the Zero Theorem. 3.25 Jaw for Matt K. If you've seen it, Jawheads, shoot us a tweet. Let us know who's right there. Not a lot of great tracking shots.
I'm coming down now from those two acid trips.
Not a lot of great tracking shots or long takes in either one of those movies, but that is our subject today because Caleb Pike is sitting in on this, and he's sort of an expert, if you will. Would you not say, Caleb?
Yes, I am the authority here.
Awesome. Well, you're getting to start it this week, Caleb. Your number 5 favorite long take in movie history.
The Punisher? Number 5. Punisher, can't remember when it came out. Really dug it in high school. Massive
action. Are you talking about the Tom Jane joint? The Punisher?
Like the Umbach. Oh, I'm sorry. Not the Punisher. Is it Punisher? No, it's... So it's this... You know the Umbach movies? The action, Asian action.
Oh, yeah.
No English. This guy, this
I think
kid.
You're thinking of The Protector.
The Protector.
The
there you
Protector.
Go. What did I say?
You said The Punisher.
The Punisher? Yeah, there's no shots like that.
I was going to say, boy.
The Protector. Elephants, right?
All right.
Where's my elephant?
Oh, you killed my little baby elephant, or took him, or whatever. Crazy action shot. Goes up these flights of stairs. I can't remember how long it is. Took them 4 days, and they had to keep switching camera operators because the camera operators kept dying. They couldn't handle the physical stress of doing these shots because they're running around with this camera rig. So it's pretty cool. Lots of coordination.
I have not seen this.
I actually just watched it today. And
oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. I think it's probably gained its fame as a YouTube clip.
Oh, yeah. It's the stunts that made him famous. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's this kid who, the story is apparently over in Vietnam, he's watching movies, and he's like, oh, all these stunts are awesome. I want to be like them. So he does the stunts, comes to America, finds out none of the actors actually do their own stunts. And then he starts doing these movies. And
It's such an impressive scene. It's one of the best fight scenes of ever committed to film. It's up there anyway. I think it's about 3.5-4 minutes long, no cuts. Like Caleb saying, running up all these stairs. Check this out. It's on YouTube.
I will. Nice pick.
It's a great
Thank
one.
You.
Matt, we swing it over to your number 5.
How about the opening scene of Paul Thomas Anderson's Boogie Nights?
I love this one.
Starting from the marquee of the theater, and then you go out over the cars, and then you start to see all the characters. PTA, man.
I agree. I had it as an honorable mention. And for all mine that I have, I wrote down actually how long they go without a take. This was 2:54. And once they get inside the club, you have Roller Girl. She's swinging around from the table. The camera goes like around her. You meet Jack. Obviously meet Dirk Diggler.
Yeah.
I love it. I agree. Totally. Awesome pick. glad I had it just as an honorable at my number five, the one that nudged it out. This film, boy, oh boy, I don't have what year it came out. The name of the film, though, is Atonement, with James McAvoy and Keira Knightley. I don't know if you guys have seen this film. And in the middle of the movie is the battle for Dunkirk. It's just a sprawling scene, and I watched it right before I came here. It is 5 minutes and 7 seconds without a take, and it's basically, I can't believe, I think this one is one of the most impressive as far as how many people and how much is used on the set, because they're on the beach, and there's all this, you know, war type stuff. You got tanks and it's, you got the carousels of what was there on the beaches. And at one point, one of the most impressive, as he's sort of following James McAvoy, looking at just this mess of humanity and war, as he's going through all these soldiers, there's a group of soldiers singing in a choir that are in a little band shell type bunker. Carousel, like, okay, a carousel actually. And the camera then leaves James McAvoy and circles around the troops who are facing towards the sea, walks around them, then comes back out of that and joins back in with James McAvoy as he's yelling at somebody else. And there's so much going on in the scene. It's so impressive. If you have not seen it, Jawheads, just for the shot alone, Atonement, awesome, awesome scene.
And the good news is most of these clips are available standalone on YouTube.
Yeah, because they're all so impressive. I agree. When I was doing the research for this, I watched all five of mine. They're all on YouTube. Absolutely. Yeah. That was my number five, Atonement. We're into our fours. Caleb, what do you got sitting there?
Well, when I read your guys' email about that, I thought you had them figured out because I have no sleep. So I'm pulling this out of my backside. I'm going to say for number four is going to be one of the opening shots in the very beginning sequence of Terminator Salvation. It is really unique, and some people are going to hate this because they're purists, and I'm a nerd, so I'm going to like it. And that is the filmmaker, and I'm actually going to one of his big seminars. It's going to be here in Chicago. All over the world is touring. Wow, this is getting really long. Shane Hurlbut, the cinematographer, did this awesome sequence. You can find it on YouTube. It's in this helicopter. So I don't know if you've seen the movie, but... Christian Bale hops in the helicopter. He gets shot down. All this crazy, crazy stuff. And what's interesting, you watch that. Definitely go out and watch it. And that was shot, I can't remember exactly, but I think it was three or four different cameras. They switched camera types because they wanted to accomplish something that other cameras couldn't in each part of the whole sequence.
Oh, nice.
So in the end, it looks like one seamless, perfect shot. Four or five different cameras. Really complicated. If you go to Shane Hurlbut's site, he actually takes it, breaks it all down for you. Really cool. So that's probably number four.
Nice.
Good pick.
I agree, totally. Because I didn't like the movie, but now it makes me want to go back and watch that scene.
Yeah, me too. I was like, oh, what was that one thing? I gotta go watch it again.
Nice. Matt, what do you got sitting there?
How about the entire movie, Rope? Alfred Hitchcock, obviously, you know, one of the masters of cinema. And there are some cuts in this movie, but he edited it. And this is before computers, to look like one seamless take. He did some tricks with some walls that would move. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, he must have spliced the film absolutely perfectly. You cannot see a cut in this entire film. And it's... oh, God, a brain fart here. The lead actor, Jimmy Stewart, in kind of a, I don't know if it's an unusual role for him, because I guess he's playing the good guy, but it's one of his...
he's trying to solve exactly what happened. He knows these two guys are up to no good.
Yeah. it's not one of Hitchcock's best movies, but I think it's definitely one of his more noteworthy ones because of this whole single take thing that he tried to do.
Yeah, and I have actually seen it probably more recent than you have, and it was my first time that I saw it. And so you can see where he does do the cuts, because he'll a lot of times go to a very dark, you know, as the camera's moving, he'll move towards, say, like a table.
Right,
but
you have to be looking for it.
Yeah, and then obviously it takes a little while there, and then he picks up again because it's a new take.
Right, but and this was the first time, well, I don't know if it was the first time, but it was one of the more famous early times that this was attempted.
Right.
You know, in a big budget movie for
the
studio.
No, I love it. I think it's definitely worthy to check it out. I thought Rope was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice pick. Over at my number four here, I have a film. It was great. We had Jim Tyrion. He's a friend of the show. He's been a guest a couple times. He's a comic book artist extraordinaire. And we had him on for film noirs, and me and Matt felt like he was just over our heads because he was picking all these great movies, and a lot of them we hadn't seen. And one that he had mentioned I had not seen was Orson Welles' Touch of Evil. Came out in 1958. At the time, I had not seen it. I put it on my to-do list. months later, I finally saw it, and I sort of forgot exactly what Jim had said, what he loved so much about it, but as soon as the movie opened, it hit me. Wow. The opening shot, it's a one long tracking shot. I have it here down as 3 minutes and 20 seconds, and it opens with I would say it's almost like a crane shot of Charlton Heston, who him and his wife, played by Janet Leigh, are getting ready to cross the U.S. border into Mexico. And they're walking towards the border patrol, and it starts as almost like a tracking shot where you get an overview of what's going on. The camera sort of comes down and then actually starts to follow Heston right up close. The composition, everything that's going on in the shots, it's amazing that they got it right. The actors are walking in front of the camera one way, camera turns around, they're going the other way. Everything's just perfect with it. You can't see any equipment. It's a marvelous shot. Black and white, total noir film, and really opens up. I probably wasn't as big a fan of the movie as some people, but for Orson Welles, and I would recommend checking it out for sure, Jawheads.
It's no Citizen Kane.
Well, some argue that it is, but I did not think it was. But that would be my number four, Touch of Evil. Definitely the opening shot worth checking out. Whew. We are into our number threes, and before we get to number three, Matt, we have a sponsor of the top five list.
Yeah, we do. And you know what? I love these guys because we work hard to create online content, don't we, Rye?
We do, Matt.
So whether it's writing, photography, music, video, a blog, comic, video game, whatever, if you create original content, then you deserve to get paid for your effort. OnScribe is there for you. They make it easy to add subscription buttons to your content using known and trusted payment services like PayPal, Google Wallet. But you can add OnScribe to your content. There's no additional fees or commissions, and it's free to get started, right? All you have to do is visit OnScribe, and it's onscri.be. Visit them today. Get the credit you deserve.
We are into our number threes. Caleb, what do you got sitting there?
Number three. My number three, I think, is your number five, and that's Atonement. And the reason for that is the birth of that shot. I found out, and I don't know if this is true. This is Wikipedia, so it's got to be right. I was looking at that the other day, and I'm like, man, that's such a sexy composition, and how much work goes into all that. And it turns out, from what I understand, the reason they did that was budgetary. So they tried to fit. They couldn't, have all these people and all these extras on for several days. They couldn't afford it. So they did. They came up with a shot that was going to get everything in there with one shot. So that is the, dare I say, production gasm. It's awesome to me, right? Because they took a problem and they solved it, and it was art. It wasn't we'll just slap this together because we don't have the money. No, they took a limitation and turned it into something amazing. So that's pretty sweet to me. So that's one big reason. It's number three for me.
Yeah, and as I was saying, I think when we're talking about these great shots where the camera is going for such a long time as it is in that particular sequence, to have that production value where there's so many extras, there's so much going on, you don't normally see it. It's probably the most that I've seen going on screen for that long a time without a cut. It's insane. So nice pick. Matt, what do you got sitting there?
I mean, when we talk about this, it's funny how many amazing filmmakers do these shots because they're difficult to pull off. So this one comes from Stanley Kubrick. I'm talking about the big wheel scene from The Shining. And this Steadicam operator, he should be mentioned by name. The guy's name was Garrett Brown. And he achieved most of it. There's a few tracking shots in this movie, but this is my favorite. They actually had him in a wheelchair, and they were pushing him down behind behind the big wheel. And he's got the Steadicam, and he's in a wheelchair. But the little boy going through the hotel with those crazy carpets, and he's just turning the corners. And then, of course, we all know the ending of that scene where he's face-to-face with the two ghost girls, those creepy twins.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that scene was so... I mean, it really took you down to the kid's level, his perspective of this giant abandoned or at least vacant hotel. So creepy, and nobody could really capture such a tone but Kubrick, and just a great tracking shot.
Nice pick. Great, I forgot about that one.
Great long take. I believe it's over 3 minutes.
Awesome. At number three, I have a film I talked about when we were discussing our favorite prison movies. The film was directed by Steve McQueen, stars Michael Fassbender. I'm speaking of the 2008 film Hunger. And there is a shot in this movie, Matt. I hope you're listening to these stats. It is 16 minutes and 30 seconds long without a cut.
Jesus.
But here's the deal. The camera never moves. It's just stagnant. It's on a position.
Static, yeah.
Static. And it has Michael Fassbender and another actor, throw it in the jawbox. I forget the actor's name. Maybe I have it written down. I don't. Another actor comes in playing a priest to talk to Michael Fassbender, who is playing Bobby Sands. This film follows the 1981 IRA hunger strikes.
Was that a cheat, though, just having it on one static shot?
Now, here's why I put this down, though. Because of how much work these actors must have put in. Because acting for 16 straight minutes off of each other, they got all their lines down, you know, the blocking down of exactly what they're going to do for 16 straight minutes, and it never takes a break. It's not one of these where, oh, you do a three-minute scene, done, cut. They got to go at it for 16 minutes, and who knows how many times they did that to get it right. I loved it.
I don't know, Rye. Have you ever heard of plays?
So, turns out not that impressive, Rye.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. Now that I think about it, yeah, that's not impressive at all. But, two, they got to stay in the frame of the shot, because when you're watching the movie, it's not as easy as being like on a stage and you got this open area to, you know, perform. They got the lighting right and where they want to be when they say such and such, and, you know, so it goes on. When you're watching the scene, and I watched it today, it's a whole dynamic of that. I mean, exactly where they're positioned on screen and how they're talking to it. It's not just two guys arm wrestling. You know what I mean? There's a lot more going on.
I'd say it's actually almost more difficult, because in a play, you expect it. You're sitting in a chair, nothing's going to move, so people do their thing.
Right.
Whereas in a movie, they have to keep you interested for that long without moving the camera.
Yeah.
That's hard.
I had actually said in my notes that the scene is actually so good and goes on for so long, it's distracting, because you become aware of the fact that the camera's not moving. And you don't see that in movies. Like,
right.
I don't know if I've ever seen that in a movie where all of a sudden the camera just, boom, sits there, and it's two guys talking for that long. It's just an amazing shot. And Fassbender, I know everybody's a fan of Fassbender. If you haven't seen Hunger, this is probably his best movie to date. It's spectacular. So check it out. That was my number three, Steve McQueen's Hunger, epic shot. Whew, we are into our twos. Caleb, what do you got sitting there?
To be the hipster and to be the anti Rage Against the Machine guy, I was going back and forth my one and two, which is going to be which. And for my number two, I'm going to choose Children of Men. Is that the right title?
Well, yes it is. But now I think that me and Caleb are going to have the same one and two. Go ahead.
Are we? Yeah. Oh.
No, that's fine.
I can mix it up.
And Children of Men has a couple of tracking shots, so I don't know exactly which one you're talking about.
This one is the car one.
The car bombing scene?
Yeah. The crazy lots of things going on. Definitely check it out, because it's mind-boggling. I won't go into too much if we end up covering similar stuff, but it's crazy because of the technical side.
Right.
It's in a car. It's not, you know, everyone else. When you look at this and then you look at everyone else's looks like a walk in the park.
Right.
Because they have all this big open space. They just have to get people out of the way so the guy can use his Steadicam and move. In this one, it's insane because they're packing so much and they have to rack focus. Like, that's pretty technical to go from, you know, shooting 12 inches from the camera to shooting, you know, several hundred yards out. So that's quite the feat. And it kind of keeps everything at their perspective, as opposed to jumping back and forth and making these cuts. You get to, if you're in the car and all this crazy stuff is happening, you're freaking out and looking all around. It's not jump cuts.
Right.
So, number two.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole movie is filled with, like you were saying,
yeah,
great shots. That's definitely a great scene.
What do you got sitting there, Matt?
And number two, I evoke this movie quite often, and for good reason. The director's name is Park Chan-wook, and the film is Old Boy. There is a fight sequence, which is not only my favorite fight sequence, but just one of my favorite shots. I don't know. It's very 2D. It feels like a side-scrolling video game.
Right.
And Old Boy himself is beating everybody up with a hammer. It's such a great... I think we talked about it in Best Martial Arts Movies or something. I freaking love this scene. I love this movie. And I forgot how long this fight scene is. It's a good 2.5 minutes long.
It is.
And there's a knife in backs. People are getting things broken over them. And it just keeps going. And like you were saying, they must have rehearsed the hell out of this thing. There's not much going on as far as camera movement aside from a left to right pan. So I guess it's sort of simple as far as technical.
But it's beautiful.
It really is.
It really is. I mean, it's a beautiful, violent shot.
Very violent. And you don't see that shot very often, that side-on 2D shot. I mean, I really can't think of another example off the top of my head.
I mean,
like Wes Anderson stuff, right? Like in the Sisu boat, he does that side stuff.
Yeah, all those side stuff. And also maybe a little bit in Kill Bill when...
I was just going to say Kill Bill.
Yeah, when they go to the fight sequence and all of a sudden the it sort of like goes to like a, almost like a black and white because you're seeing them behind the... what would you call that?
The silhouette.
The silhouettes you're seeing.
So oh, yeah, maybe, through the rice paper.
Rice paper, that's what I was looking for, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, awesome pick, though. Honorable mention for me, obviously. At number two, let's see if me and Caleb did swipe our picks here.
We might be separated at birth.
At this one, it's
well,
a very...
You guys look so much alike.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm saying thank
you. Sorry, Caleb.
It's a compliment to me. this one, it's a recent film, 2013. It's a 17-minute shot, opening shot. I'm speaking of Gravity.
Okay.
Not your number one?
No.
Okay, good. All right. So I had to throw this out there. Obviously, this is such an impressive shot. It's just gorgeous. And when I got the DVD, I still love DVDs, and Matt criticizes me, but a lot of times, like especially on a movie like this, they're packed with tons of great, great extras. And a movie like this, I liked it a lot. I was a huge fan for Jaws, but I think now I can almost say it's a masterpiece after watching so much that went into this. I can't even imagine how long conceptually they thought of where the camera was going to go, how it was all going to work. And Alfonso Cuarón said it was very important that they had to have these long takes because when you think of NASA video, there's no cuts there. When you see an astronaut working on the space station, it's long. You're watching this guy for a long period of time.
Was he the director of Children of Men
also? Yeah. Okay. He's a master. And then two on top of that, is amazing as this camera work is, obviously you see a lot of reflection in their space visors. Mm-hmm. And then I come to find out as I'm watching the extras that the visors were never there because obviously they would see reflection in the camera constantly when they were using so much camera work. So the visors are all digitally put in and all the reflections you're seeing is visually put in. There's a point where Sandra Bullock's breathing. You can see her breathing and it's like, God, these guys thought of everything and how much work went into it for such beautiful shots. But what a gorgeous film to look at. If for nothing else, if you think the story isn't strong enough, go back and watch this movie just for the visuals. It's so breathtaking. I love it. So that's my number two, Gravity. It's a 17-minute shot without a take to open up the film.
Oh, my gosh.
There you go. We are into our ones. I thought that's what Caleb was going to have. What do you got sitting there, buddy?
All right. Number one is going to be Goodfellas.
I'm right there with you. That's my number one.
And the reason for this is technically, Gravity. That movie, I don't know how they didn't have scientists with them side by side, you know, working through not only the math and getting things right, but just cameras and space, how crazy that is to get their perspective, the lens right, so that, like, one person isn't massive and the ship is, you know, super far away and weird. So that's pretty impressive mathematically. The reason I chose Goodfellas was that one shot where they're going down into the club, and I like it for several reasons. One, it's kind of like the Atonement pick in that... Turns out Scorsese, but they couldn't use the front door. They were restricted. They weren't allowed to use the front door, and that's what kind of, you know, he took the opportunity to, let's make this into a one-shot wonder. And it's technical, and what's interesting, we went through this class, is it turns out if you actually watch them, look for fire hose, watch that shot, and look for fire hoses. On the wall, and they go past it twice. They actually go in a circle through that whole going in the kitchen, working their way down to the club. But what I love about that is through that whole shot, so many of these shots are just every director tries to get that in because it's a pride thing. It's a, you know, hey, I got my one shot wonder and it's better than so and so and so and so.
Right.
But this one tells a perfect story. You could have filled that times 10 with dialogue and you couldn't have expressed what that shot pulled off.
Sure.
Because it showed us who he is, how much power and influence he has, and what this chick thought of it.
Right. The soundtrack.
In one shot.
The soundtrack in
that. It's perfect. Yeah. It's so brilliant.
It was the Ronettes, I believe. And then he kissed me.
He kissed me.
The perfect song. And you're right. It just like they're going into the Copacabana. The table gets whisked to, you know.
Exactly.
And then everybody starts buying them drinks. I mean, how cool was that guy in that moment.
And then he's like, and I work in construction. She's like, who are you?
Yeah, what do you do?
So technically...
I'm a union delegate.
I know, yeah.
Yeah.
So technically, they worked around something, and that shot fit the story so perfectly. So I applaud him for that. That's good stuff.
I agree. So that's my number one as well. And the only thing I would add is the reason it's my number one is because I think it's the quintessential long take in that a lot of other filmmakers, I would even say including Alfonso Cuarón, have gone for the long take because they were inspired by the shot in Goodfellas. I think it really is, when you're talking long takes, it's the pinnacle. It may not be the most difficult technically, although I'm sure it had its challenges, and it may not be the most beautiful, although it had those story elements you brought up, Caleb, but it was just the total package, and it was early enough and important, in such an important movie.
Sure.
Everyone's going for it.
It's an awesome shot. It's an awesome movie. There's no arguing that. For my number one, actually, Caleb did steal it. It is Children of Men, the car scene as well. And I just wanted to mention a little bit of highlight on that, because I took down some notes. It's 4 minutes and 7 seconds. And one of the impressive things, too, is the... they had four guys, I guess, on top of the car working the crane, because the camera basically is going through the car, through the windows of the car. Actors were getting out as it was being shot, getting back in so that they would be back into the camera. So choreographed and so beautiful and timed. So I remember watching in the theater thinking, that's impossible. I was like flabbergasted when the scene came on, and that very seldom happens to me, where I'm just like, it almost seemed like that couldn't have happened. That doesn't seem real. Were the actors not there? Were they digitalized people of themselves? Then we wouldn't have this problem. Back to the Congress.
Yeah, maybe it was Robin Wright.
Yeah, exactly. Because it seemed like it was almost impossible. Yeah. It was just such a beautiful scene. But also the highlight in there that I mentioned, there's another great long take in that movie, which is at the end when Clive Owen comes out of the hospital during that war zone take, and he has the baby in hand. And at one point, blood splatters on the camera. It keeps following along. It's Alfonso Cuarón is sort of become the master of the long take now, with Gravity and Children of Men under his belt. I mean, he's sort of embraced it, and I think that's, he's going to have to have follow that up in every single movie that he does now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he's definitely set the bar pretty high for himself.
Yeah, there were a couple honorables I wanted to get to. One of them, I mentioned this for my favorite opening of movies, is the opening scene of Contact, which opens up with Planet Earth, and then sort of does a drawback. It's a lot of digital type stuff, don't get me wrong, but it basically goes through the entire our entire solar system,
galaxy,
and then out to the galaxies, and how far our radio signals have gone, and then it sort of slowly goes into,
and then it's all in a little marble that aliens are playing with.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's called the Zero Theorem.
It's Men in Black, actually.
But actually, it goes into the eyeball of young Jodie Foster, who is played by, I believe, Jenna Malone as a young kid. And it's her, and if you look into her eyeballs, actually, you can see the shape of the machine that's going to be built to take them through the wormhole, which was a nice touch. But the whole shot was just gorgeous. And then one other one was Kill Bill, as we mentioned.
Yeah.
Was a great shot when she goes in for the little tea house.
The House of the Blue Leaves or whatever.
Something like that. It was a great shot. And I kick myself in the ass if I didn't mention the Before series as a whole, Before Midnight, and all of those have unbelievable tracking shots. It's two people talking, and there's not a whole lot going on, but you still got to applaud them. They're sometimes walking through the streets of Venice and wherever they're at, Greece, it doesn't matter. But the shots are amazing, because they're not taking a cut, and the actors are going and walking, and just awesome stuff. Any for you, Matt?
Actually, my two honorables were mentioned, The Protector and Gravity.
Mine was Gravity and one episode, the beginning, I think, maybe it was the end, of Band of Brothers. I love Band of Brothers.
So
oh, my gosh.
And since we're talking about television, there is a great long shot in True Detective.
Yeah. Yep.
Episode 4, where Matthew McConaughey goes undercover. Boy, that shot was awesome
as well.
Really
long.
Really long. I that was awesome. Jawheads, if we missed one of your favorite long takes in movie history, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We will retweet it and get the discussion going. What we're going to do is take a break, and when we come back, Matt is going to be taking Caleb on in Terry Gilliam, Christoph Waltz movie trivia, plus a cinema war looking at which Tom Cruise movie should be renamed. We'll be right back on CinemaJaw.
Hey, Rye.
Yeah.
Do you ever ride your bike when it's dark out?
Sometimes.
Sometimes you probably have some family members, kids, spouse, you know, nephews, nieces.
Sure.
Yeah, they might ride their bike when it's dark. Well, hey, you know what you got to do? You got to go to Amazon and get this new thing. It's from Active Fortis.
Ooh.
Yeah, and you can actually check them out also at activefortis.com. It's an LED bike light from them.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, and we want you to be safe out there, Rye. You know, because we got to do Cinema Jaw. So check out Active Fortis. Get their new LED bike light and check them out on Amazon.
How do you spell that?
It is ACTIVFORTIS. And we thank them for their support of Cinema Jaw.
I need that.
Right?
The front of mine is broken. The little reflector thingy. Yeah. I'm screwed. So I've been actually Googling that. So perfect.
Caleb, dude, supporting our sponsors. I like it.
I need
buy
it.
Buy it and tweet that you bought it from Cinema Jaw.
I will.
Please, that would be awesome. All right, let's see.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a Cinema Jaw movie fact. The film The Hunger is notable for an unbroken 17-minute shot, which has been mentioned to be one of the greatest film scenes in film history. In it, the camera remains in the same position for the duration of the shot. To prepare for the scene, actor Liam Cunningham moved into Michael Fassbender's apartment for a short period of time while they practiced the scene between 12 and 15 times a day. And that is your Cinema Jaw movie fact.
To get ourselves a treat.
Cinema Jaw's favorite musician, Sorrentos, has just released a new music video, and we will have the link at the top of our show notes for this episode. Sorrentos' unique sound has been described by industry insiders as an emotionally powerful vocal style, masterfully united with music that is a fusion of classic 80s rock blended with a soft rock and pop music. We thank him for his support of Cinema Jaw. Check him out at melogia.com.
And we are back on Cinema Jaw, hanging out with Caleb Pike. Caleb, again, for the Jawheads who want to check out your podcast online, the best place to do so
would be DSLRVideoShooter.com.
Do it, Jawheads. This guy is a great resource for new cameras, new technology, and just how to use these things all in all.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Matt, before we get to Cinema War, we threw a couple items into the Jawbox.
Did we?
And it's been a long time since we've had Elias in the Jawbox.
I haven't even oiled the hinges.
Oh, let's open up that Jawbox.
What's your pleasure, Mr. Cotton?
The box.
We got a box! Oh, what's in the box?
What's up, guys? I'm excited because I was finally able to charge my phone again. I lost battery somewhere in Africa, and I've been jamming out to some Sorrentos because I loaded up his music on my iPhone.
Way to
go.
Way to support the sponsors.
Yes, absolutely.
That and a little bit of Toto.
Yes. I forget what that was, but that's great.
The Africa song.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay, Toto. Got it. You know, Matt, I'm a little disappointed. You just gave away one of the Jawbox questions, the Hunger co-star with Michael Fassbender in that scene was Liam McCone.
See, we don't need you. We're going to ship you away again. I'm just kidding. We're very happy.
One other thing that's kind of weird was the Tina Yothers. Does anybody actually remember where she's from?
No.
Dude, no.
She's from Family Ties.
Oh, yes. I knew the name. I knew it was like late 70s, early 80s.
So whoever just said that, I think they were just stretching. You know,
I don't get the reference.
I don't know. So, unless you did a character on SNL.
Tina Fey, Tina Yothers. I don't know.
That was a stretch. All right, and that's about it.
That was it.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back, Elias.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys.
We miss you.
All right, get back
now,
in there.
Yeah, get back in there.
One other topic, too, Matt, I wanted to mention. We had, did a Cinema Jaw riddle, and we gave the winner away on social media, but I did want to mention that Rodney Stone, who's a longtime listener, has his own podcast going now.
Yeah.
Was...
It's not his real name, but yeah.
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 His Twitter name. That's Twitter, he goes by his Twitter name. So that's what I'm going to call him.
All right.
Rodney Stone won the riddle. We had about, I think, 18 correct answers. We drew Rodney's name in and sent him Vannon, the movie, plus a prize pack.
Nice.
So that was pretty awesome.
I hope he enjoys it. Let us know, Rodney. We'd like to know how you like Vannon.
We also did If I Stay prize pack, which include like a reusable gift bag and travel type stuff. Martina Enriquez won right here in Chicago. Won that. We shipped that out to her as well. So, Jawheads, please follow us on social media as we're doing giveaways all the time. Matt, it brings us to a segment called
Cinema War.
In Cinema War, Jawheads, this is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week. And our guest this week, Caleb, gets to play judge, jury, and executioner and tell the Jawheads who he thinks won the Cinema War. It's important, too, man, because we are battling for 20 seconds of precious Jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want. Now, as I was saying, they renamed Edge of Tomorrow, which I didn't think they had to. Heck, Elias, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic, which Tom Cruise movie would have benefited more from a better title? Oblivion or Night with a K, Night and Day? Rye, you'll be fighting for Oblivion. Matt, you'll be fighting for Night and Day. Let the Cinema War begin.
Matt, Oblivion was actually a solid sci-fi film that suffered greatly because of its name. Now, I know it's named after the graphic novel. However, I, for one, thought it was an adaptation of the video game Oblivion. And I'm not even joking here. I think many people in the movie-going public were confused.
I think the movie suffered greatly because of Tom Cruise. Right? I know we like our puns here on Cinema Jaw, especially during this segment. But Night and Day is so freaking obvious that even the screenwriter's mom groaned. Come on, really? A secret agent named Night falls for a girl named Day? That's a stretch, man. Oblivion, on the other hand, sums up the tone of the movie perfectly. The Earth was no more. He lived in Oblivion, nowhere.
All right, Matt, many people think that Tom Cruise is doing the same kind of sci-fi film. And I actually would say I think they're wrong. However, when you give a movie the title Oblivion, people think generic. They would have been better off calling it Morgan Freeman, Master of the Underground Tribe.
All right. Forget the fact that... That was good. Forget the fact that the pun is worse than this girl said she knew me from the Vegetarians Club, but I never met her before. That's a good pun. Night and Day is worse than that, but forget that. It's just lazy. It's lazy. Taking the two names of the main characters and making it the title of the film, I've never been a fan. Starsky and Hutch, Benny and June, Turner and Hooch, I'm looking at you.
All right, but at least Night and Day, at least it's a play on the characters' names. You might not like it, but at least it has that. Oblivion is nothing. Nothingness. Literally. I would have rather a simple title like Earth 2077.
Oh, man. Really? Oblivion is actually very fitting for Tom Cruise's career these days. And I guess you could say that his old career versus his new career, it's kind of like Night and Day.
Wow. Wow. I will say, Matt, Oblivion, much like Edge of Tomorrow, borrowed heavily on other sci-fi films before it. People looked at these as concepts that are rehashed with Tom Cruise in it. But of the two, Edge of Tomorrow is clearly a better title. Oblivion needed a lot of help.
Yeah, it's such a better title. They changed it. Right, if any of these films needs to be retitled, it's Night and Day. I would have called it Secret Agent Meets a Normal Girl, Kidnaps and Bangs Her. That's a way better title. Oblivion, on the other hand, ain't so bad.
Wow. We are button heads here on Cinema War, as always, week in, week out. Me and Matt can't agree on a damn thing. We throw it over to our guest, our jury, Caleb. What'd you think of this Cinema War?
I think it was very, very well done. I've weighed a lot. I've thought a lot.
It looked like it. You were deep in thought.
These questions have kept me up at my night myself.
At one point, I thought he was sleeping, but I think he was just very deep in thought.
I was taking it to another level. And
that was meditation, right?
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah, I was getting my zen on. And I'm going to have to give it to Ryan.
Oh, really?
Ryan. Because Oblivion can mean so many different things. And Night and Day, as horrible as it is, you can draw all the connections. And for all we know, you know, they came up with the title and then they made the movie. So, you know, you never know.
Awesome.
It was that second point. It was a really good point.
All right. It brings me to 20 seconds that I get to rant and rave. And I'm actually going to take a big stance change here, Matt, because I don't want to say I rallied against, but I was against video on demand for a long time. The idea of not going out to the theater and experiencing it with other people. But I do have to actually say I've changed my mind somewhat because it's bringing a lot of these small films that we've mentioned, The Congress, The Zero Theorem, Life Itself. There's been a lot
Snow
of
Piercer.
Snowpiercer. There's been a lot of great ones. That one,
Red State, Kevin Smith's film.
Sure, there's been a lot of great ones that we hear from Jawheads that tweet us and comment to us via email or Facebook that are always like, oh, we don't get that movie until such and such time because they're not in Chicago or New York or Los Angeles. And I think that this is great because now we can share this and say, hey, it's on video on demand. You can just watch it. And they're not even that expensive. I rented, for instance, the Congress for $7. It's fine, you know? Yeah. You're watching it at your house.
See? I told you, Rye.
That does not mean I'm changing my stance on seeing movies that you have to see in the theater, Matt. I'm just saying it's a great option for people.
And I watched them both on my phone.
All right. All right. Enough. Enough of that because that leads into a whole other argument.
Yeah.
All right. As we said, The Zero Theorem is playing in select theaters and also video on demand. It is directed by Terry Gilliam. It stars Christoph Waltz. We are playing Terry Gilliam, Christoph Waltz movie trivia. It works like this. We go back and forth. If one of you guys does not know the question, the other gets a chance at a steal. If you get hung up on any one of the questions, our engineer, the best in the biz, Elias Rodriguez, has clues to all the questions. You get one trip to the ER. Caleb, you're our guest. You want to go first?
Oh, man. I suppose. Let's begin the pain.
Question number one over to Caleb. In 2005, Terry Gilliam directed Matt Damon and Heath Ledger in this fairy tale film.
ER me.
Whoa! Oh, question what? Number one. Has this ever happened before, Matt?
Not that I remember.
I don't believe so either.
I'm here to break records and state right now that I'm the absolute. People are out there like, no, I'm the worst. No, you are not. I am the worst at names, movies. Hey, some of these movies I haven't even seen. It's
you're a
bad.
Trailblazer. 205 episodes in. I don't think anyone's gone to the ER. And I should have stated it. I don't know if you were clear. You only get one trip to the ER. All right.
Question and these are only going to get harder. So let's just get this segment finished up here.
Question number one. What was the name of that Matt Damon Heath Ledger film?
All right. Your clue is male siblings are these.
As for the title?
Yes, that it's is. Part of yep. the title, yes.
Brothers.
All right.
There's another word in
Grim.
There.
Oh,
yeah!
It's getting interesting.
Yeah.
It is 1-0, Caleb. And that was the last question of the game. No, all right. Question number two, over to Matt. In 1998, Gilliam directed Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, where this actor played the lead.
Johnny Depp.
I start them easy. The two questions are supposed to be easy. Oh, boy. All right. Question number three. Whew. Caleb, Christoph Waltz played Hans Landa in this 2009 film.
Pass? I warned you guys in the break. This is going to be bad. Oh.
Wow. Wow. Matt, you got a chance for a steal.
Was it Inglourious Bastards?
Haven't seen it.
Oh, you should totally see it.
I know.
Oh,
I know.
Boy.
It's
oh,
worth
boy.
It. Definitely
before you leave
movie.
Mothers, see it. All right. 2-1, Matt K. Question four is over to him. Matt, Christoph Waltz won his first Oscar for Inglourious Bastards. Which movie did he win his second Oscar for?
Django Unchained. Yeah.
3-1, Matt K. We need a big comeback here, Caleb.
Bloodbath.
All right, 3-1.
My prediction.
Question number five over to you. Name the 1981 Terry Gilliam directed movie about a boy, a bunch of dwarves, and saw Sean Connery appear in it.
Whoa. Oh, Time Bandits? No way.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
I got a question. Wow. You're screwed, man. I got a question.
It's downhill from here.
That was awesome. 3-2.
Wow.
He's right back in this ball game.
I've got this funky thing for weird movies out of the 70s and 80s. So
there you go.
That,
it is 3-2. Matt, question number six is over to you. Name the 2011 film that starred Christoph Waltz, Reese Witherspoon, Robert Pattinson, and had to do with the circus.
Water for Elephants.
I don't know how the hell he got that. Only because you probably heard me talk about it on the job.
No, I read the book.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
My wife got it on the Kindle. I read it.
All right, it's 4-2. You could still tie this thing up.
My
it's
mom
four
recommended
to
it.
Question number seven is over to Caleb. Terry Gilliam directed 12 Monkeys, starring Bruce Willis, Brad Pitt, and this actress who played Catherine, the lady Bruce Willis visits to help him. Who was the lead actress in 12 Monkeys?
Oh, gosh. The movie's 12 Monkeys? Seeing as I haven't seen it, I'm going to have to
You could just take a
take
guess.
It.
You could just take a guess.
Just any lead hint. Actress?
It's not Robin Wright.
Jeez. Oh, man. Tina Fey. Oh, really?
Wonder if Matt knows this one. Brad Pitt, Bruce Willis, and who in 12 Monkeys?
I forget. I'll take a trip to the ER.
Oh, a trip to the ER. Elias Rodriguez. Who's the actress in 12 Monkeys?
Your clue is initials MS and also in The Last of the Mohicans.
Has Matt seen The Last of the Mohicans?
It's two clues.
It is. Wow.
I've seen Double. The last.
He comes out of the Jawbox firing with two clues.
Martin Sheen in drag.
Yeah.
Oh, we were looking for the beautiful Madeline Stowe. Madeline Stowe.
Madeline Stowe.
Oh, boy. The ball game is now over. It's 4-2, and the last question of the game is over to Matt. In the 2011 comedy Carnage about two couples, one of them Jodie Foster and John C. Reilly, which actress plays Christoph Waltz's wife in that movie?
2011?
Yep.
Carnage? John C. Reilly and who?
And who?
No, it's Christoph Waltz and who?
I'm sorry. John C. Reilly was in the movie with Jodie Foster as a couple, and it's Christoph Waltz and who was the other couple?
Madeline Stowe. Was Martin Sheen?
You got a guess on this one, Caleb?
No.
Nothing?
Squat. Oh.
We were looking for Kate Winslet. Kate Winslet was also in that film.
Yeah.
Matt wins this one 4-2. It wasn't a total two game. Can we get a handshake?
Cold handshake. I was very surprised with myself.
Yeah, you
that,
did all right.
That time bandits really validated me.
And that was one of the tougher questions on here.
Man, Time Bandits, that's a funky movie.
That's an awesome
That goes
movie.
Right along with these two really out there movies you guys have been talking about.
Yeah?
Now, in case it comes down to a tie, we call it a jawbreaker here. This question would have been over to you. It's simple.
More embarrassment.
All right. Better Christoph Waltz, Quentin Tarantino collaboration, Inglourious Basterds or Django Unchained?
Inglourious Basterds. What was the question?
All right.
He thinks this is funny. He does this every week.
That's incorrect.
It's just you being a butt.
It's a okay. It's a subjective question, so there is no correct answer.
Oh, the humor here on Cinema Jaw. Boy, oh boy.
It's always funny.
Here was the real jawbreaker. Age of Christoph Waltz. Close to two. Matt, you got a guess?
I mean, he's in his 50s, so I would say 53.
53, Elias, lock him in. You got a guess, Caleb?
51.
We'd give that to Matt. He's 57.
Oh, wow. It should have gone over.
He's that old.
Yep.
He looks great.
He does.
I mean, in the Terry Gilliam movie, it looks fantastic.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't discovered until late, you know?
Yeah. It's a shame because he's fantastic.
I was waiting for the Holy Grail question. I thought that was going to bail me out.
I was writing him, I couldn't think of one that was at least somewhat difficult to answer.
Yeah, that seems like they'd all be pretty easy.
Yeah, I was like, oh, everybody's going to know the Holy Grail
question. We are the knights who say...
Yeah, that'd be rough.
Do you know? I mean, what do the knights say? Yeah, okay.
They say a lot of things, but they start with we.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Shrubberies.
Oh, I love it. I got to watch it. Movie.
Oh,
guys.
Dude, let's just.
It's rough. It's really rough after so long.
Really?
I watch it with my wife. I'm like, yes. I'm like, this blows. Except for like those four scenes that y'all know is
but
coming.
But a flesh wound.
Awesome.
We can just quote it all night long.
So
how about
fun.
That?
The monks, the gatekeeper. Yeah.
the rabbit?
The rabbit for sure.
Oh, the rabbit's hilarious. Awesome. Awesome. Speaking of awesome, what a great jaw this was, Matt.
Indeed.
Yep. It brings us to the end of a great jaw, but we had one more sponsor.
Do you like to play mobile games on your phone, Brad, like when you're waiting online?
Who doesn't?
Yeah, you know, it's a long line at the movies. You got to check out this new game. It's from Guinea Pixel. It's called Bullet Time Bob. It's a fun, exciting, action-packed, explosive platform game. Bob goes on an exciting adventure to find his loved ones that were taken by the bad guys. So you can help Bob conquer his enemies and fight his way through all the exciting levels. The game is available on Google Play and soon to be released on Apple iTunes. And I've played it. I downloaded it, and I really like it. So if you got time to kill playing mobile games, check out Bullet Time Bob.
Awesome. What a great job, man.
We thank them for their support. Yeah, seriously.
And speaking of thanking, we got to thank our guest, Caleb Pike. Thanks for coming on Cinema Jaw.
No problem. It was a blast. Thanks for having me.
One more time for the Jawheads at home that want to check out your podcast.
DSLRVideoShooter.com.
Awesome. Do it, Jawheads. Also, we got to thank all the sponsors of the show. We're going to have notes all the show notes for them. Too many to list.
Yeah, we... Dude, thank you all for sponsoring Cinema Jaw.
It's unbelievable. And also, thanks to the best engineer in the biz, Elias Rodriguez, who is back in the Jaw Box.
Thank you, guys. It's fantastic to be back. Can't wait for the next couple months and years.
Some big guests coming up.
Yes.
It's a good thing we got all these sponsors, because now we can afford to send you on another trip to Africa.
Oh, geez.
I was thinking Antarctica this time.
All right. Well,
another continent. You should visit all seven.
Go hang out there with Werner Herzog.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, Matt, until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.